This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This past Sunday, PBS aired another episode of Prime Suspect, starring Helen Mirren as Detective Superintendent Jane Tennyson. Writer Linda LaPlante is the creator of that series, which has become compulsory viewing for many mystery fans, one of whom is our book critic Maureen Corrigan. Maureen recently talked to Linda LaPlante about Prime Suspect, as well as her recently published detective novel Cold Shoulder. The novel is about a homicide detective who ends up on the skids, homeless, drunk, and selling her body.
Both Lorraine Page, the police detective heroine of Cold Shoulder, and Superintendent Jane Tennyson of Prime Suspect are consummate professional women. They not only battle crime, but the entrenched sexism of their respective police departments. One crucial difference between the two women that I see, however, is that while Jane Tennyson seems to have iron control, Lorraine Page falls apart in a major way in Cold Shoulder. I'd like to ask you to read, if you would, from an early chapter of Cold Shoulder, where we meet Lorraine Page in her present fallen state for the first time.
She had almost died that night. The hit-and-run driver had probably not even seen her, and Lorraine couldn't remember a thing. She'd been taken to the hospital with head injuries. The following weeks were a blur, as she was moved from one charitable organization to another. She had no money left, no medical insurance. Eventually, she was institutionalized and preliminary diagnosed as schizophrenic. To begin with, she was not thought to be an alcoholic because so much else was wrong with her. She had severe abscesses on her shins, a minor venereal disease plus genital herpes, skin abrasions, and was in poor physical condition from lack of decent food. She weighed only 105 pounds, and she was over 5'8". She looked like a walking skeleton. Her body was pale, almost bluish, but her hands and face were tanned from living on the street. 80 cigarettes a day had left her with a persistent, heavy cough. She contracted pneumonia, and for 5 days it was doubtful that she would live. When she pulled through, the hallucinations, screaming fits, and vomiting attacks made the doctor suspect severe alcohol withdrawal symptoms.
Thank you. When I first read that passage,
My God, this woman is a cop.
Well, yes, this woman is a cop. And I also thought of what one reviewer said about Jane Tennyson. He praised her mineral coolness. And I thought this character is about as far away from that mineral coolness as you can get. I've read that Lorraine's breakdown is modeled on the career of an actual former L.A. policewoman. Could you tell us how you came to hear about her story and describe her experiences for us?
She wasn't actually L.A. I met this woman in L.A. Mm-hmm. And I was there promoting, I think, Prime Suspect, actually. And what had happened is that it is known in England that I pay for stories. And so I had been talking about how I gathered material and how I paid people for their stories. And I was staying at a hotel, and I got a call from reception. And they said, oh, this woman is downstairs to see you. So I thought it was a journalist. So I said, oh, send her up, fine. And looked down my list to see who I was talking to. And I didn't have her on a list. I didn't have anything on a list. And she came in, and, well, I mean, I knew just one look that she wasn't like any journalist that I'd been talking to.
What did she look like?
She had a kind of wig on, which she used to change quite frequently, these wigs. It was very dark, black wig. She was very badly scarred down one side of her face. But it was her manner. She was quite a big woman. It was just her manner. She was just very pushy. But she was nervous as well, very nervous. So she said, I know you pay for stories, and I've got a story, and that's why I'm here. So I said, fine. I said, but, you know, it's very difficult for me to tell you. If you're going to tell me for an hour your life story, and at the end of it I'm going to say, look, it's exceedingly boring and I don't want to do it. I've still got your story. So she said, that's cool, yeah, I'm with that. So I said, but if you can tell me in a few short sentences why you think I would want to do your story, then maybe we've got somewhere we can talk. So in a very few, I mean, she just said, listen, I was a cop, I am a homicide officer, I was an alcoholic, I committed a crime whilst I was in the force. I got kicked out and I lost everything, and I've been on the streets for 8 years. So, you know, when somebody says it absolutely flat and staring at you, you think, well, it's a rather good story. I mean, so I said, all right, you've got me hooked. I said, let's start talking. So then she turned around, she said, well, can you wait a minute? I'll go get my lawyer. And he was in the car park. So she came up with this little kind of short, squat guy. And we did a negotiation. We talked. And it was quite tough because, you know, she sort of felt that once she told me her story, that was it. And I said, it's very different to that. I mean, you can tell me, then I have to sift through it, then I've got to work with you. And she said, what do you mean, work with me? She said, I'm a private investigator. I don't work with people. So I said, well, you're going to have to, because you're going to have to take me to the places that you've described. And after a lot of argy-bargy and further negotiations with this little squat guy, she agreed to give me 6 weeks and a certain amount of days in those 6 weeks. And so that was the second stage. And then I said, well, there's a third stage. I said, because when I finish the manuscript, you've got to go through it. She said, what, all of it? So I said, yes. So eventually we agreed.
Has she read Cold Shoulder?
Yes.
In its finished form, yeah.
Yes, in the finished form.
Yeah, yeah.
She's funny about it, actually. Obviously, you know, one has to consider the readers, as I'm constantly told, consider the readers, that, you know, she's a pretty awful woman to begin with, and quite obviously from that passage that I stumbled my way through. Mm. But, you know, that she was tougher, a lot tougher,
mm-hmm.
A lot sadder. And in many ways, to encourage somebody to have a page turner, you've got to sort of pull out a little bit, mm-hmm. according to my editor. You know, mm-hmm. my agent once said, my God, who's going to read this? This woman with no teeth. And I said, she doesn't have no teeth. It's just one tooth missing. And she gets it put back. But it is, you know, you have to soften her slightly. So when she read the eventual finished manuscript, I got it back with all these funny notes on. I ain't this cute, underline. And another one was crap over 2 pages. And then another on the pages she'd write in very thick red felt tip. I'd got, I did not say this.
I also read that you conducted some first-hand research with L.A. prostitutes in the course of writing Cold Shoulder. Could you describe those research expeditions for us?
Oh, God, that was a classic, because what she used to do, yeah, I mean, we didn't get on, you see. This what was so bizarre about this lady, myself. We didn't get on. We argued. She used to call me Miss Lardy-Dar. She said, oh, my God, you've got such a lardy-dar voice, Jess. She was always screaming at my voice, hated the way I spoke. And so we onto the prostitution part of her life when she became a hooker and a crackhead. She said, look, I'll take you to a typical prostitute's dive. She said, a real low-life place, the place that you end up in like I did. She said, but this one is better than where I was at. So I get to this awful place that's got 7 girls behind a kind of window, rather like where I am now, except this is a studio. But there was this window with, you know, those kind of blinds that are slatted blinds going mm-hmm. downwards mm-hmm. in colours, like plastic. And all the girls were sitting on these awful old kind of moth-eaten sofa and a chair. And they had all this really appalling underwear, you know, fluffy and pink and stuff. And she said, these are my friends. She said, you know, she was introducing to all these girls. And I was going, hello, how are you? Very kind of you too. And, of course, I'm in the room with the window. And so they said, you want a cup of tea? So I said, fine, I'll have a cup of tea. So I had a cup of tea. I'm sitting there. And she left. disappeared, which she did frequently on me. So she says, I'll be back later. So she disappears. And I'm sorry this is such a long, rambling story, but it to get to the point, I myself had just taken up tennis, and I'd got my tennis underwear on, which are the sort of, you know, your rather thick, stodgy white panties and a very solid bra. So one of these girls said to me, she said, you'll never know what it feels like, because I'm sitting there with my notebook saying, you know, and how long have you been on the game, so to speak. She said, well, you know what it's to look like. She said, you don't, you know, if you're uncomfortable with us, she said, try sitting in your underwear. I said, no, I don't think I should go to that length. She said, take your frock off. I said, well, all right. So I take my frock off, and now they're all laughing at my underwear. And so anyway, the laughter breaks through, and they're all telling me about their lives. And I'm sitting there, and this curtain keeps opening. These blinds keep going back. And there's this sort of vague male standing hovering. And one or other of the girls, and actually you've got a bleeper, you go, Barbara, would you go to the back, please? Like, you know, a checkout at a supermarket. And I think, oh my God, this is terrible. What am I going to do if somebody picks the one in the white tennis pants? So, and I'm getting into a hot sweat about this, thinking, oh, there's another one. Oh God. Every time this curtain moved, I thought it was my turn. Well, after about an hour and a half, as these girls have been going in and out, I'm thinking, how come nobody is picking me? And I said to all the girls, I said, do they know my name out there? And she said, yeah, we gave the name. He said, nobody wants you. But it was the odd feeling that I went through of, you know, fear and then, oh, I'm so unattractive.
I love that you admit that because, you know, I think the proper thing to say would be just, oh, I lived in dread of being chosen. But, right, there's that other emotion of pick me,
yes,
that, you know, we all grow up with. And it actually reminds me, there was a scene in Prime Suspect 1, I think, where Jane Tennison is interviewing a group of prostitutes in a pub and prospective customers come over and look them over.
Exactly.
And, yeah. And, I mean, did you have that sense of life imitating art as you were sitting there?
No, I tell you what it is that all the police officers that I've met adore prostitutes. Mm. Not, I'm talking about sexually permissive, not that area. But from prostitutes, they get so much information. Mm-hmm. And the police women treat prostitutes with such respect. I think, approve or disapprove, feel that they do assist society and a certain element in society. And they also give information quite freely about someone or other that they think should be looked at. And so because of that, I think I felt very at ease with these women because I kind of fantasize, I suppose, that I'm a bit of a cop myself, you know, in the fantasy world. But because I treated them with respect, and they treated me with respect, we ended up as great friends. Mm. And I liked all of those women that I worked with.
Our guest is Linda LaPlante, creator of the TV detective series Prime Suspect and author of the new novel Cold Shoulder. She's speaking with our book critic, Maureen Carrigan. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to detective writer Linda LaPlante, creator of Prime Suspect, in conversation with Fresh Air's book critic Maureen Carrigan.
Cold Shoulder delves into the world of transvestite prostitutes, and that's a world that Jane Tennison also investigated in Prime Suspect 3. I'm wondering what draws you to that world.
Well, funnily enough, because I was doing the pair at the same time, so really one drew me to the other. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what draws me into the worlds that I go in. I mean, who wants to spend, you know, 2, 3, 4 years of their life visiting some of the worst criminals in British prisons? But I do. Somebody said something to me. It's like one of these transsexuals said something. She said, I wish to God somebody would write it down correctly what I am. Mm. I'm not a transvestite. I'm a transsexual. Mm. There's difference. And so I didn't know the difference. I didn't know, you know, that I suppose it was just like so many people. I clumped it all together. Mm-hmm. And I thought they all must be gay or homosexual. I just didn't know. And gradually, the friendship from... And again, the emotional sadness attached to so many of these people because they had been so confused all their lives. Just drew me into that world. There was no darkness in there. There's sadness sometimes, but there's a lot of laughs and a lot of great, great, great friends. I mean, sometimes I've been out in very strange places with very odd-looking people, but, I mean, I slap a feather bow around my neck and I'm all right.
What's wonderful to me about both the women detectives you've created is that they're so complex and contradictory. Jane Tennyson is willing, for instance, in Prime Suspect 3 to participate in a cover-up in order to get a promotion. And she's also no particular friend of the other lower-ranked women in the police department, even though she herself has had to deal with sexism. Lorraine is bossy and manipulative and even abusive at times to her friend Rosie in Cold Shoulder. I think we've seen these kind of impure heroes in male detective fiction, and I'm thinking especially about the American hard-boiled form with tough guys like Sam Spade and Mike Hammer. Do you have the sense that you're breaking new ground with these morally compromised women detectives that you're writing about?
I hope so. I would like to, but I think it's just not, you know, trying to break ground with female detectives. It's trying to break ground on all levels. Women have been so badly depicted as most unreal creatures in the fact that you very rarely can look at a book that would have a heroine over 40 that is acceptable as still a woman, even. I mean, you just don't, they don't come up on any level. So that I set out to try and show that there's life after 25 and not necessarily with a perfect background. Mm-hmm. That, you know, people love realism. They actually love it. And people say, at long last, women looked at Jane Tennyson, that at long last, there's somebody that is identifiable. I mean, we don't all not smoke. We don't all have 44C cup, right, and blonde hair, and we're not all beautiful. Not everybody can have a job and a perfect home life and a career. Not everybody can have a career and a family. And to also make that character as interesting as a male counterpart. Mm-hmm. Because it's very strange to think, do you find Jane Tennyson attractive sexually? Do you find Lorraine Page of Cold Shoulder sexually attractive when you're told she has all these fatal flaws? And I think you do. Mm-hmm. If you took, Raymond Chandler's Marlowe, Philip Marlowe, and say, now I'm going to create a hero. He's virtually an alcoholic. He has a cigarette stuck out of his mouth all the time. He treats women like garbage. He never follows from one book to another with the same female. You never say, where was that blonde that you were with the last book that you loved? He's ditched her. He's now on something else. And the way, you know, women are described in the detective novels, I mean, you very rarely hear a woman described in any way attractive who's over 25.
Right.
They're very hard-boiled, hookers, tarts, or they're ingenues of such beauty that take your breath away and his away. So to create a full-blooded female that does smoke, that does drink, is not perfectly formed, and still physically attractive, is rather saying, come into the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the most attractive women are flawed. That's why they're so attractive.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from women about Jane Tennyson as a heroine?
Really, it was, I think, the overall show, rather than her specifically, mm-hmm. the approach to it was different throughout. It was the first time, I think, on any television show you had actually been into a mortuary and into a pathology lab. I mean, I know you had, what was that series over here?
Oh, Quincy?
Quincy.
Yes, he shouted.
But I mean,
all the time.
It was always Quincy leaning over and you could hear a little bit of a cut, maybe. But you never actually saw the nitty gritty. Mm-hmm. And it was, I had to fight for it too. And I said, no. She is in the mortuary. Let us see her handle that body. And truthfully, I was asked over and over, don't you think she should be more emotional with the dead body? And I said, why? She doesn't know her. Doesn't know her at all. And so it was an approach, really, from all angles that I think I got the most kind of kudos from. And Helen, because of she's such a wonderful actress, rightly got the laurels as a fabulous actress for her performance.
Linda LaPlante is the author of the new detective novel Cold Shoulder and the creator of the TV series Prime Suspect. She spoke with Fresh Air book critic Maureen Carrigan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.